I suspect if you are a follower of Jesus this morning, and even if you're not yet a follower of Jesus, you will have met the criticism of Christianity that for those who are followers of Jesus, Christianity is just a crutch for us to lean upon. It happens to be one of the most common criticisms of Christianity in the world. It offers consolation to life's losers like me and you. A comfort for the physically weak, for the intellectually naive, for the psychologically insecure, like you and me. Hear the words of an American actor: organized religion is a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people who need strength in numbers. Ouch. Hurts, doesn't it? These hard-nosed, intelligent, free thinkers have no need of a crutch like that. They just get on with life. Now, I'm not going to comment on that particular criticism in detail this morning, but I do reflect on it as I look at the world and see how much persecution that Christians are going through in certain parts of the world. And when I read about it and think about it, I think to myself, some crutch. I could do without that. I've mentioned before that some believers from North Africa who I met a few years back said to me, the one thing you can be certain of when you become a Christian, a follower of Jesus in North Africa, is you get salvation and you get persecution. The two go hand in hand. And such was the case, of course, in the early years of Christianity. That German pastor, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his book, The Cost of Discipleship, says, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying in this passage today. If you've never reflected on that, look at verse 24 of John chapter 12. Very truly, 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 I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. If you want life, you've got to die. If you want to be fruitful, you've got to die. If you're going to become a follower of Jesus Christ, you've got to be prepared to die. You've got to die. We saw last week, this is the last week of Jesus' life. And the death warrants have already gone out for Lazarus and for Jesus himself. The crowds are gathering. The religious leaders are very agitated. You see that in verse 19 that I mentioned at the beginning of that song. So the Pharisees said to one another, see, this is getting us nowhere. Look how the whole world has gone after him. And John is the master of irony in his gospel. Yes, that's the whole point. The whole world has gone after him. 2 billion Christians across the world this morning. The whole world has gone after him. That's exciting, isn't it? 2 billion Christians. The church growing faster than ever in Latin America, Africa, Asia. Only on the sad continent of Western Europe is the church in actual decline. It's worth pondering, isn't it? As we sit here sometimes on a Sunday morning. And of course, there's further irony in verse 32. He says, I, when I'm lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. So that by putting Jesus to death, they actually ensure that the whole world will come to see the light shining for all to see. It's a great moment, isn't it, in the history of the world. Verse 20, now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we'd like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip in turn told Jesus. Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. Now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say, Father? Save me from this hour. No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Then a voice came from heaven. I've glorified it and will glorify it again. The crowd that was there and heard it said it had thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to him. Jesus said, this voice was for your benefit, not mine. Now is the time for judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out. And I, when I'm lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. He said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. The crowd spoke up. We've heard from the law that the Messiah will remain forever. So how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Then Jesus told them, you're going to have the light just a little while longer. Walk while you have the light before darkness overtakes you. Whoever walks in the dark does not know where they're going. Believe in the light while you have the light, so that you may become children of light. When he had finished speaking, Jesus left and hid himself from them. Look how the whole world has gone after him. And that's the introduction of these people, these Greeks who come to the festival who want to see Jesus. The whole world, even non-Jews, are now coming up to the festival and are interested in Jesus. Gentiles who want to see Jesus. And it prompts Jesus, hearing of their request, it prompts this moment when he suddenly says, the hour has come. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Just consider for a moment the staggering nature of that phrase. All the way through this gospel, for the last 3 years, we've been reading that his hour had not yet come. His time was not yet. His hour had not yet come. And now suddenly, Jesus said, the hour has come. It's as if he's standing before the watching world with a conductor's baton in his hand. And he says, now, the hour has come. It's as if Pilate and Judas and Caiaphas and the Roman soldiers and everyone else is just waiting in the wings of history until the carpenter from Nazareth says, the hour has come. All waiting in the wings of history. And this is the turning point. This is the hinge. This is the fulcrum. This is the climax that we're coming to in Jesus' life. And on the one hand, you've got people coming saying, we want to see Jesus. And Jesus saying, the hour has come. And that's the point of this section of the John's Gospel, that the way you see Jesus, the way you really see Jesus and taste him and savor him and enjoy him and understand him and live for him, is through this hour that has come, that's about to unfold before our eyes and ears. What an hour it is. Just a few things to think about. It is the hour of Jesus' glorification. That's what he says in verse 23. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. In this hour, the world is going to see the glory of Jesus. That means the real character of Jesus. They're going to see his real essence. They're going to see, we're going to see what it really means for him to be recognized properly. We're going to see in this hour that's coming up here, the full weight of the revelation of who Jesus is, to be seen in his fullness. And it's not what the Greeks are expecting. People want to see Jesus in particular ways. They want him to turn up in miraculous ways or do specific things for them and entertain them and fascinate them. And he says, no, this is the hour that is coming. This is the way you see me. It's not what we're expecting. And if you want to see Jesus as he really is and understand him and get to know him, you need to see him in this hour. What does it mean for the Son of Man to be glorified? Now is the hour, the time for the Son of Man to be glorified. It's not one thing. It's not just the cross, his death, but it's his death and his resurrection and his ascension. The hour has come, the time has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. That phrase, Son of Man, of course, refers to a little passage in the book of Daniel. And I'd love you just to turn to it this morning, just so we can get the weight of what Jesus is saying. Daniel chapter 7, if you're using a church Bible, it's page 893. So Jesus is saying, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Daniel chapter 7, page page 893, verse 13. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days, that's God, and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. That's the hour that's come. Praise God. Yes, he's going to be glorified. This is the moment when the carpenter from Nazareth attains the throne of the universe. It's brilliant. And it begins with him in verse 27 being troubled. The hour has come. He knows what's coming upon him. The shock, the revulsion, the horror that he's got to go through with this. When he realizes that he has to, that battle that he had, I've got to go through with it. He says, well, Father, then glorify your name. And the Father is glorified in this act of Jesus' glorification as well. And the Father speaks from heaven. Do you see this? This is the Godhead in action for the salvation of men and women through glorifying themselves. Jesus prays, the Father speaks. This voice was for your benefit. Okay, God pull back the heavens and spoke, and this voice was for your benefit, says Jesus, not mine. Three times heaven opened in Jesus' life and God spoke. Once at his baptism, once on the Mount of Transfiguration, and here. This voice was for your benefit. You know that God's in this, the Father's in this, the Son is in this. And then he tells us, very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. He dies. But in verse 32, when I'm lifted up from the earth, I'll draw all people to myself. It's the hour of glorification. Do you see how significant it is? I didn't know this was going to happen this morning, but just in the prayer meeting before the church started, one of our church elders who was leading the prayer meeting brought this little box in. It's got 29 corn kernels in it, just 29. And he told us that if each one was planted and each one produced another corn on the cob, in 3 years' time, do you know how many corn seeds there would be? If every one that was produced after the first year was then replanted and produced the same again, and then the same again, and the same again for 3 years, do you know how many there'd be from these 29? 15 billion. 15 billion. Unless a kernel of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains a single seed. But if it dies, it bears many seeds, much fruit. If I'm lifted up, I'll draw all people to me. Not people, all people without exception, but all people without distinction. How much do you see in the hour of glorification? This is how significant this is. Paul says in 2 Corinthians that the God of this world has blinded the minds of unbelievers. They don't see. But when the miracle happens that God comes into our lives, he opens our eyes. God, who said, light shine out of darkness, has shone in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Do you see the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ? The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. If you see that, that's because God has chosen to pull the curtains back and say to you, look at him. That's what you see this morning, the hour of glorification. It's absolutely fantastic. I was watching the television news a couple of weeks ago, and there was a lady on the being interviewed who'd just been given her sight, a new treatment for a particular eye disease that she had, and she hadn't seen for, I'm not sure whether it was all her life or for many, many years. And they showed the moment when her eyes, she could suddenly see. And she was in tears streaming down her face. I can see, I can see. We want to see Jesus. It's the hour of his glorification. But go to those verses in verses 24 to 26. It's also the hour of invitation. Jesus is talking about himself, but he's talking about us. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. He's saying, my journey, my pathway is your journey, your pathway. Do you see that? This is so important. We are followers of Jesus Christ. Is that right? Followers? If you're a Christian, you're a follower of Jesus Christ. That's what it means to be a Christian. In fact, people who became Christians in the first century, they were known as followers of the way. There was a way of going. And Jesus says, this is what has to happen. You have to die. You take up your cross. You put him first. You hate your life in this world, as he says here. This isn't absolute love and hate. This is Jewish idiom about how you compare and contrast. But you love him and more than this world. You deny yourself. If your life ultimately is not God-centered, God-focused, God-saturated, if it's self-centered, then that's idolatry, because we are only meant to worship him. He's meant to be the center of everything. If all you do is invest in you, then what he says is ultimately you will lose out. C.S. Lewis, talking about materialism, says one of the best weapons of the enemy is contented worldliness. Contented worldliness. No, we're to follow in his steps. You see that in verse 26? Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant will be. Where I am? Where is he? Seated at the Father's right hand? Where I am, there my servant will be. Father, I want those you give me to be with me, where I am, that they may behold my glory. That's where we're going. That's the invitation, to lay down our lives in sacrificial, total commitment to him, because that way we gain everything. And if we don't, we lose everything. I was serious about that call, as I know Andy and Helena from Kosovo have been talking about this for a while, that they need more people in Kosovo to help them. It may just be that God's planting a seed, or you're going to be the seed that's going to say, yes, I could do that. That's how God wants me to live my life. I'm going to go and learn Albanian and serve in Kosovo for a number of years and plant many seeds, because it'll be worth it in the end. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. You ever been on a long journey where you just can't wait to get home? You know? The longest time I've ever been away from home is 3 weeks. That was back in 1997, and I did a trip around Eastern Europe and Russia. I went from Minsk to St. Petersburg by overnight train, which was dreadful. I went from St. Petersburg down to Moscow, and Moscow down to Rostov-on-Don, and then over to Samara and back to Moscow. And after 3 weeks, I just wanted to get home. I just wanted to see my wife and my kids. And you fly back, you know, and you're just exhausted, and then you get in the bus at Heathrow, and you're going to stop in Oxford, and as you drive into Oxford, they're running down the pavement. His daddy's coach. Yeah? That's what it's going to be. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. I can't wait to get there. My Father will honor the one who serves me. What a moment that would be, to be honored by God, to have given your life in such a way, to have lived your life in such a way that the moment you get there, he says, well done, good and faithful servant. You see, we're all after likes, aren't we? On Instagram, Facebook, you know. We all want approval, you know. We all want people to, you know, even the humble preachers. I was hearing about a humble preacher the other day who put on Facebook, humble today to speak to 35,000 people. Humble today, my foot. Like me. No, that doesn't matter. The approval of the Father is all that matters. It's the hour of invitation. What are you responding to that invitation? But thirdly, it's also the hour of judgment. We usually think of judgment, don't we, of judgment day, at the end of time. But here Jesus says in verse 31, now is the time for judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out. Both the world and Satan are judged at this hour. Not on judgment day, at this hour. The world is not the physical world. It's the world of men and women in rebellion against God. Under the power of the evil one, the prince of this world, as he calls him. And you and I know that Jesus is being judged, isn't he? He's being condemned by the world, and he's bearing the price of our sin. They do their worst. They execute the Son of God. But in his death and resurrection and ascension, he reverses the curse. He redeemed us from the curse by becoming a curse for us. And so he disarms the principalities and powers in the heavenly places. He triumphs over death. And Jesus said, I saw Satan falling like lightning from heaven. Do you see what's happening in this hour? It's the hour of judgment when the world and Satan are judged. The decisive blow has been struck against all our enemies. You will have heard the illustration before, but it's quite helpful. You know, when at D-Day in the Second World War, when they landed on the shores of France, the Allied troops, that was D-Day. In a sense, the decisive blow was struck. We knew we had victory. But there was a long time to come until you got VE Day, Victory in Europe Day. There were a lot of skirmishes and fights to have, but the decisive blow had been struck. In the world, you can have many troubles. Anybody here without any troubles? None whatsoever? In the world, you can have many troubles, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. We're on the winning side. In my attempt sometimes to encourage people, a couple of years back, I sent a text to a friend of mine who was a bit down, and I said, if God is for us, who can be against us? That's got to encourage somebody at the start of the day, hasn't it? And he texted back, the world, the flesh, and the devil. No. No, we're on the winning side. We don't fight for a position of victory. We fight from a position of victory. This is the hour of judgment. But it's also the hour of salvation in verses 32 and 33. When I'm lifted up from the earth, I'll draw all people to myself. He said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. Lifted up on a cross, yes. But not just a cross. Lifted up in exaltation. He's quoting from, or referring to, you don't need to turn to it, but Isaiah 52, that passage of the suffering servant. See, my servant will act wisely. He will be raised and lifted up and highly exalted. If I'm lifted up, not just on a cross, which is what it refers to in terms of death, but lifted up and exalted, I am going to draw all people to me. Every knee will bow. Every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. They'll either be drawn in salvation or they'll be drawn in judgment. All people without distinction. The Greeks, we want to see Jesus. Yes, they'll be there. And all of us here at Woodlands too, we are the people who demonstrate that what Jesus said then is being fulfilled. We're evidence that he's doing it. So an hour of glorification, an hour of invitation, the hour of judgment, the hour of salvation, and finally the hour of opportunity. Just at the end of the passage there, verses 34 to 36. The Jews are still confused. You say you're the Messiah. You say you're the Son of Man. The Son of Man is the Messiah, but you say you're going to die. How does that work? You're talking about dying. Jesus says, don't worry about that. I am the light of the world, and I'm about to be extinguished. Now, this is so, so serious at this hour of opportunity. Look what he says. You're going to have the light just a little while longer. Walk while you have the light. Verse 36, believe in the light. Darkness is coming. We don't know when it'll come. That's what Phyllis was saying. That's what she was trying to say. I didn't know this was going to happen to me, but it's happened, but I'm ready. I know. That's what you keep saying. I know. The opportunity is now. Who knows about tomorrow? The opportunity is now. You just imagine yourself on that rugged mountain pathway with a torch, but the battery's going. You begin to panic. If I'd known, if only I'd known. Jesus says, seize the opportunity while you have the light. Can you imagine walking the rest of your life without Jesus, knowing what's going to happen to those who reject him? Believe in the light while you have the light, so that you may become children of light. You know, one of the things that bothers me sometimes is the people who just float around the edge of church. this church and other churches, and sometimes they're in and sometimes they're out, and sometimes they're sure and sometimes they're unsure, but they're never really connected. They never really said, I want to know definitely about Jesus and I want to sort this out once and for all. This is the hour of opportunity. Now is the day of salvation. But a day will come when there won't be a chance any longer. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. What an hour. The hour when he is glorified. The hour of invitation, the hour of judgment, the hour of salvation, the hour of opportunity. And look at the final verse, or the end of the final verse. This is interesting. This is fascinating. I've never seen this before till last night. Sir, we want to see Jesus. When he'd finished speaking, Jesus left and hid himself from them. Let's pray together. Father, forgive me for my hardness of heart. Thank you for every token of light that we have, every shaft, every ray of revelation that has come from you. This is for your benefit. God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, has shone in our hearts. Father, thank you that so many of us see the glory of God in the face of Jesus. Jesus, we love you. Thank you for this hour. Thank you for going through with it. Thank you for drawing us to yourself. But we hear you saying, follow me, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies. It might be Alistry, it might be Derby, it might be my workplace, it might be school, it might be somewhere else in England, it might be overseas. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am ultimately, my servant also will be. Father, as we take this Lord's Supper again now, he said, do it, please do it to remember me. May we take the bread and the wine into our very bodies, the symbols of your body, and feed on you in our hearts with thanksgiving. And may we hear you speak to us again. What do you want to say to me, Lord? What do you want to say to each one of us? Oh, to see the dawn of the darkest day. Christ on the road to Calvary. Tried by sinful men. Scorned and beaten then, nailed to a cross of wood. This, the power of the cross. Christ became sin for us. What a love. What a cross cost. We stand forgiven at the cross. The hour has come.